Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to join us for the weekly Community Geek podcast. My name is Katie Kobe, and I'm the head of training here at Feverbee and a co-host on the awesome podcast that we have every week. Today, I'm so lucky to be joined by Laura Horak. Laura, go ahead and say hello.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for having me. I'm super honored to be invited.
Laura is wonderful and someone that I have known in this space for several years. Many of you may have known her when she was running community at Hootsuite for North and South America. And she's now at a really great company called Thinkful, helping them to build their audiences and relationships across their developer community. One of the ways that I really love to think about Laura is, you know, she is kind of the quintessential early adopter. She's constantly exploring how emerging technologies can connect people and solve problems, including crowdsourcing for collaborative solutions for Hurricane Sandy crisis, sanitation systems for the developing world, and space-ready social media apps for NASA, which is something I think is amazing. I would love to hear more about that at some point.
And it sounds like a mouthful, but it's been a blast, quite a wild ride.
Yeah, I could totally imagine. And another thing that I think is so fantastic is, you know, you have a really great global view of everything, not just from like working in different markets, but you've traveled to over 70 countries. Like that, I'm just like, mind is blown. It's amazing.
Yeah, I got really lucky. I think that's been such a helpful thing for being a community builder is the ability to kind of put yourself out there and sort of see the world differently and really immerse yourself in culture. So it's been extremely, on top of being awesome, very beneficial for working.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Yeah, I think you just – I've noticed I've done a little bit of traveling myself actually. Last weekend I went to a really, really small island up in Lake Michigan. It's called Beaver Island for a friend's wedding. And this island is like 600 people live there full time. And obviously, you know, summer is like the high season where like tourists come in, but like in the winter, it's in the middle of like Michigan, it's completely like frozen and snowy. And it was this beautiful place. But what I loved learning about was how the locals were interacting and the way their sort of local community worked. And it always just sort of puts the things that we do for our professions in perspective for me whenever I have the opportunity to travel. So I think
definitely.
That's
definitely. I studied cultural anthropology back in college, and it was kind of been one of the most interesting foundational experiences that I've had for community building is understand how people not only react to themselves, but how they kind of live their lives in the context of others and how you can apply that and get people excited it's really interesting.
Wow, that is incredible. It sounds like a very, very relevant background for getting into community. I always think it's really interesting to see how people get into community. Like my background, I studied international relations and foreign policy, which can also be quite relevant in a way. But
that was part of my major, so I'm right there with you.
Yeah, so that's
amazing.
Yeah,
we'll geek out about that one later.
Yeah, absolutely. So, to get us going here, I would love it if you could tell us a bit more about Thinkful. I was just doing a little bit of research on your guys' site, and it looks like a really, really great product and concept, and it definitely built around community, heavily community focused. So, would love to give us a little bit of insight there.
Of course. So, I am lucky enough to be in two of my favorite spaces, which are education and developers. Or engineers. I kind of have been a little bit of a hackathon junkie, but didn't know how to write a line of code. And so now I am joining a company whose mission is to really, we pair students with mentors. And so they really have that one-on-one relationship and the mentor will take them through the line of code. And so the idea is to fill the existing skills gap that, when people graduate from school, often those don't really translate to the tangible skills that they need to enter the workforce. So what we try to do is really help. And we think that, education and the best way to inspire people isn't a one-size-fits-all. So we have one person, we figure out how to put them together and get them excited, and we provide structure and learning, and it's the benefits of a classroom without the hassle. So you have 10 to 12 hours a week in which you take the course, and you can do it while you're still working. And so I've been learning my front end, so I'm working on HTML and CSS, but it's, the three pillars are really the curriculum itself, the mentorship, and the community. So it's been really interesting to see how to keep students motivated, how to get them to share their goals and backgrounds, and how to leverage this amazing group of mentors and their, these expert developers. And it's it's been so fascinating. I remember I was doing my first deep dive with them, and I discovered that the guy who is one of our mentors was Steve Jobs' first hire on the Lisa, and he was the project manager on it.
Oh my gosh. That's incredible.
I got goosebumps. Everyone has such an amazing and compelling story, and they're all in it for all the right reasons. They just want to give back and, you know, help pay it forward. So it's been a fantastic group to be a part of. I'm very lucky to have joined.
That's amazing. How do you, I mean, this might be a little too secret sauce, I'm not sure, but okay. I'm really curious, like, how do you pair the mentors and the students up? And like, when you go out to, like, you know, find new mentors and that sort of thing, but, you know, learning the code is just one part of it, but I also think in terms of having a really strong mentor-mentee relationship, you also kind of have to get along personality-wise too. So do you have any, like, do you guys do interviews or anything like that?
Definitely. So what we do is we have the mentors themselves. We kind of find out a little bit about the student and the mentor, what their goals are, what interests and industries they have, and try to match them together. And as well, the other thing is their schedule. Mm-hmm. So our mentors, you can be scheduled 24/7. So what we really try to do is pair, you know, as many of those interests as they can. So if somebody's into, say, finance and Python programming and happens to be available at this hour, we'll do our best to make sure that they meet each other. But it truly is fascinating to see kind of when that spark hits and they become friends rather than just like a mentor-mentee relationship.
Yeah, that sounds like it'd be really fantastic to watch and just very like fulfilling and heartwarming, you know, like that's you're really amazing. Getting a lot from, you know, what your role is and all of that. So good for you. That's so great. Thanks so much.
It's like matchmaking, but
kind of, right? Matchmaker.
Professional pairing.
It'll be, what is that show on Bravo? Isn't it like Millionaire Matchmaker or something like that? You'll have your own show where you're just like matching up developers. It'll be great.
Yeah, I have a story about that offline, but we'll.
Perfect. One of the things that I wanted to chat a lot with you about actually is how offline networking really plays, you know, a crucial part in the success of your community efforts. I mean, definitely at Thinkful, you know, it sounds like the offline relationship building is huge and definitely in your background as well. So, you know, could you talk about how that has really helped you to sort of get to your community goals, potentially share any stories with us?
Oh, definitely. I think that it's such an important element. Like as a community manager, it's so easy to get stuck behind your computer screen and to sort of get lost in that echo chamber on the internet. Mm-hmm. And it's been very helpful for me to kind of realize and remember why I love my job so much and kind of how awesome it is to get out there and meet people in person. So I think that both my experience at Hootsuite and I'm starting out doing events over here at Thinkful, they've been totally different communities. You've got a social media community of oversharers, and you've got an engineer and developer community, which tend to be a little more introverted, was maybe my initial conception of it. But the cool thing about going out there and getting to know people at these events is, on top of, you know, helping you fill out your metrics, which I'll go into, is that it really kind of puts you in touch with the user, and any sort of presupposition that you may have gone in there with can be totally shattered. Like I went to my first programming only conference this weekend.
Oh my God.
And I nerded out so hardcore, but I didn't know what to expect when I walked in. I didn't know it was a Python conference. It was called PyGotham. I do not know how to write a line of Python. So, I mean, it was interesting. I was like, oh, are they going to accept me? Are they going to like me? But I came out of there just being so shocked at how supportive the community was. Everybody went in there and it was whatever background you were, whether you knew how to program or you didn't, they were just so open. They had transgender people in the community. They had people from all backgrounds, people that didn't even speak English. It was one of the most awesome experiences to be among a community of builders.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. So I think that as far as when it comes to attending events, the things that they've helped me out with is I've always done a little bit of a combination of online to offline and offline to online. So when I started out at Hootsuite, I was really tasked with being a community builder for community managers. And so I started out by joining a couple of online resources, the CMGR chat and the CMGR hangout. But what was, to me, the biggest catapult was becoming a part of the CM meetup that's organized – by a couple of rock stars out here in New York. And what it really did was it facilitated a lot of one-to-one relationships and solidified them. So mm-hmm. where I may have started online, it really took things to another level. It would help me identify and recruit ambassadors. It would help out with potential partnerships. I formed an advisory council at Hootsuite for community managers as a result of it. From a content perspective, it was amazing what you could do with putting a couple people together. It gave you product feedback and industry insights. Mm-hmm. I mean, the number of leads and social growth, I mean, I can't rave enough about in-person events and how helpful they were.
That sounds fantastic. And I mean, just sidebar, I'm going to throw a little plug out there. As a lot of you know, or if you don't know yet, Feverbee, we're hosting our first really big event in San Francisco at the end of October. It's called Sprint. Check it out at Sprint.
Exciting.
Yeah, sprint.feverbee.com. And that's one of the things we want to make sure that all of the attendees are getting, you know, a lot of opportunity to meet people that maybe they would have never met before that they really, really want to meet and learn from. So,
I will be asking for time off.
Yeah, I didn't mean to have a shameless plug there, but you should definitely come. If you can get out here, feel free. You're more than welcome to crash on my couch.
Definitely. Deal. Done. It's not a shameless plug when there's actual value. I mean, having gone to community manager-oriented events, it's A, total internet domination. Like, we did the CMX Summit, and uh-huh. we took over as Twitter's number one trending topic.
Yeah.
But it's just – these are the people that you're already interacting with, whether you know it or not. And the experiences, it really becomes like a support group.
Yep. Yep. I would 100% agree with you there. The support that you get, especially, you know, anyone in your industry. And really, I mean, thinking back to sort of the whole offline nature and like thinking back to your like local community. If I put myself back in Beaver Island from this past weekend, like that's everyone getting together kind of like in the center of the town and like, you know, people knowing each other's names in the grocery store or like in the hardware mm-hmm. store, like that support group is right there. It might not be about like, you know, a specific, you know, topic or anything, but I mean, that's really kind of like the essence of it all. Like you see what we do online, like really come to life, like in different areas outside.
Definitely. It's hard to find those shared experiences sometimes unless you put yourself out there or unless you have an amazing company like Feverbee that kind of brings together like-minded people. So you go out of your way to, to find those people because, I mean, everyone that you grow up with, most of them don't end up becoming community managers or even know what community is.
Yeah.
So it's really exciting to find people who are like-minded and can actually, you know, understand some of the challenges that you face and know what it's like to have phantom phone vibration and everything else.
Yep, exactly. All of those things that we all share with one another. So another question I have, especially related to offline work, like I think it's really, really easy to, you know, see the qualitative results of it. But, you know, there are a lot of organizations, especially like when you've got a company that's going to be like putting money towards sending you to an event or putting money towards like sponsoring event. How do you talk about like, well, one, like measuring the results to like make sure that it was worth it. But then also, you know, when you're sorting out budget and that sort of thing, like how do you approach that sort of this, I guess, the financial and the numbers side of it?
Okay, so when we when I started out over at Hootsuite initially, I'm in the process of creating our event strategy right now here at Thinkful. So I'm gonna talk to the Hootsuite side for a minute. We started out initially basically trying to crowdsource and support existing events that were happening and seeing how we could inject ourselves into that conversation. But like they were already raising their hands and they were eager beavers, so we were basically saying, how can we support them and give them a bigger platform to stand on? And it started out kind of as a back to the one size fits all thing, but we kind of said, okay, we'll call them all Hootups. And I started out, remember my first day, that was a crash course and like reading all of our blog posts, being like, what is a Hootup? Like, what's going on? But the way that we ended up talking about it is we broke it down into three different categories. So what we did was we had some of them that were kind of more social events. So from a budget perspective, each one had a little bit of a package. So it would come with a predetermined set of time that was involved on our end versus what we could get out of it. So the social kind of happy hour type events were low barrier to entry. You would fill out an application form and, it was a chance to spread our culture and our brand rather than anything else. Then we had educational style events, which of course got a little bit more backing financially. And we had the kind of post-conference happy hours and networking events. So they all had different budgets and different outlines, but the way that we really measured it to justify it to the higher ups was, everybody loves sales. And I think that the way that I see communities, it's really top of funnel. It's your responsibility to, be the voice for your company and kind of get them excited and wanting to be a part of your culture. And you want to invite other people to continue to interact with and add to that culture. So the way that we, would have that is I call it the hug and roll.
All right.
Which I pulled from a friend's episode. I'm not going to lie. But, the whole idea of it is that I got a lot more deals, than people would have expected coming from a community perspective, because you're not trying to sell anybody anything. Mm-hmm. So you would have, signups and customers and partnerships and affiliates. You would send up coupon codes as well. Mm-hmm. So it would be easy to track and quantify exactly where those leads were coming from.
Right.
And it was easier to justify when they could see, oh, these particular types of events give me this kind of a qualified buyer, and here's why. I also did it, I worked a lot with the business development team for product feedback and industry insights. So it was fantastic to be able to kind of help facilitate some of those partnerships. Hootsuite had an app directory. So you would kind of go in there and have a plugin with Scoop.it or Storify. And these were people that I had met offline, and we decided to kind of really bring them in.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And then the other thing, social growth. I think that working at a social media company, that wasn't like a hard sell.
Yeah.
But we did a lot of our events internationally. Mm-hmm. So it was all about localization. So we would start and we would create Twitter handles for different countries and in different cultures. So it would be, you know, the number of follows and retweets and shares and just raising awareness in a way that said, we're all about you and rather than about us, like tell us what you want. And I think content produced and collateral. I mean, it was less about who showed up in the room, and it was more about meaningful relationships, you know, that may take some time afterwards, but that you can point to and start quantifying.
That's a really, really great point. Less about like who is there, who that brand is, who that person is, and more about like what's the relationship you can build on and take home and move forward with in your day to day.
Exactly. Like I could fill a room with 300 people, but you know, when it came down to it, that wasn't what was going to make my boss happy. What my boss really wanted is, okay, what's going to happen 3 months from now as a result of that?
That's awesome.
So I ended up switching. We started doing content strategies and sort of things that ended up really showing how much we understood our audiences.
That's fantastic. Do you have any sort of advice? I mean, so not everyone out there is, you know, an extrovert and really good at going up and introducing themselves to people. I mean, myself included, I sometimes will go to events and I'm like, oh man, I wish I could just sit in the corner with a drink, but I can't. So I got to go. And I just kind of like take a deep breath and go out there. But for those who maybe, I don't know, maybe never haven't done a lot with events or spend a lot of time behind the computer and aren't around, you know, people as much. Do you have any recommendations for, you know, going out and like really developing those like meaningful relationships? Is it all about just, you know, introducing yourself to someone and like chatting with them a little bit more and making sure you get their contact details and staying in touch? Or what tips do you have there?
I'd say it'd be a little bit of both. I'd say do your homework before you show up to the event itself.
All right.
I call it the pre-event blitz. Being in, you know, cities like New York and San Francisco and a couple of other hubs, you have a million events every day to choose from. So it's kind of helpful to see which are worth attending in the first place and who you should be rubbing elbows with. So what I would do is I would do a hashtag search and kind of use geolocation to filter out people who weren't around there and maybe even clout score. So you would start to flag the people that were talking about things that you might be interested in and, you know, kind of creep out their avatars a little bit so that you would know who to meet when you wanted to in the room. But as far as when you're in the room itself, my solution has always been just to talk to the person that's right in front of you. Like you'll end up keep going, you know, you'll keep going around the room itself.
Right.
But just have that conversation. And I feel like sometimes when you ask questions that are too I prefer to ask open-ended questions. I feel like a line that's always worked for me is, what's your story and how did you come to be here?
Oh, that's a great line.
And I think that it ends up, you know, people end up giving you their life story, their context, or this or that. Like, there's no way of basically saying, are you having fun? Like, what do you do? Here's your job. Like, it facilitates a conversation. And I really, mnemonic devices have helped me out because names and faces. Mm-hmm. But I think that, yeah, really getting people to talk about themselves and what motivates them and sort of slowly introducing them to the person next to you, because sometimes you get stuck talking to somebody. I know this is a horrible thing to say as a community manager.
No, but it's true.
But you'll kind of get that stage five clinger who is just the sweetest person in the world, and you want to channel their excitement.
Right.
But you need to figure out how to, like, you know,
well, you have continue. To keep it moving, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, you need to make sure that you – connect with a lot of people that are not just like one person.
Exactly. Or say you forget someone's name.
Yeah.
So what you do is you introduce them to the person that you just met, and then you kind of go off and do something else.
Oh my gosh. That one is – the name game is – I mean, my mom has a really hard time remembering names. I have a really hard time remembering names. And one of the things that my former CEO taught me when I went to like a networking event with her, she said, when someone introduces yourself, like when you shake their hand, say their name again. So you would say like, hi, Laura, nice to meet you. And then when you ask them a question, try to bring their name in again. And then if you can say it like a third time too, that will help it stick a little bit. Or even just trying to like repeat the name in your head three times in a row. But yeah, I mean, especially when I've noticed, I mean, people will still ask for like business cards here and there. But for the most part, like you're just on a first name basis with people and then you're like, go find me on the internet. And if you can't remember like who they are, like what company they worked with, it's really hard. So that's
really interesting, because the more that you mention someone's name, the more of a personal connection that they feel with you.
Interesting.
You're really building a deeper relationship on an emotional level.
Oh yeah, I can imagine. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I haven't looked into any research or anything behind it, but I could see how that would make someone feel that way.
And if you still got past all those things, when in doubt, just hand over your phone and tell them to add their Twitter handle or something. That's pretty much works for me.
Just send me an email right now. Thank you.
Exactly. I went Twitter, but the thing is, it's helpful to like really, so at the end of the night, you scrape together and put a Twitter list together, and remind yourself where you met those people. I take pictures of business cards because it's amazing how they'll disappear on you.
Yep.
LinkedIn used to have Card Munch, but now they've partnered over with Evernote, but it's amazing how those notes remind me, of the context.
Yeah, I could absolutely see that. I just actually pulled a couple business cards out of my bag. I was rustling through a bag and I found some business cards from Lithium's Link conference that happened earlier this year, back in May. And it definitely reminded me, it like put me right back in the place of those conversations and the people that I met and, you know, people I followed up with and people that I actually want to reconnect with too. I have a couple people, the cards are sitting literally right in front of me, and I'm like, as soon as I need to send them an email and like reach out to them at some point in the next few days. So
They become like post-it notes. Like you start like moving them around, touching them.
Yeah, it's very true. Photos of business cards is a really incredible idea. I wonder if there is like an app somewhere where you can like take the picture of a card and it'll somehow like save it into some sort of like get it in your contacts or something.
Evernote does that. So
does it really? Is it turning into contacts?
Yes. So LinkedIn ended up partnering with Evernote to do that. Mm-hmm. It started out as Card Munch, and you would take a picture of your contact, and then it would update, and you could add a note about it, and then it would send them a request on LinkedIn.
Oh my God, that's brilliant. I'm gonna have to test that a little bit. I did notice, I was just on LinkedIn the other day, they've completely changed the way their sort of contacts behave. So like when you're on someone's profile, there's like a little section where when you're on your profile, you can leave like private notes about that person. And it pulls in like their contact information like right up at the front. And I thought that was like really handy.
Yeah, that's been amazing. That was what Card Munch used to be. And so it was something private. So it's really fantastic. I actually, the other thing that LinkedIn bought out was Reportive.
Right. And I love Reportive.
Reportive is great. I was a little bit sad. All my friends at LinkedIn, who I love dearly, that one really got to me as a community manager. So I couldn't really stalk where everybody was and really get to know them. But there's a new tool out there called Vibe, which is in beta. And I highly suggest testing out, which it actually does a lot of what Reportive used to do, but across a lot more platforms. platforms. It has GitHub and things like that for, you know,
oh, that would be especially, engineers. Yeah, if someone's a developer community manager, that would be perfect.
Exactly.
Oh, how handy. Look at all these little tools and tips and tricks that you've got. That's fantastic.
I get happy. It's a little much.
You know, I love that. And I, when I, in college, I worked at the Apple store, and one of my favorite things to do, I think it's really funny to admit this, was actually go into the app store and look at all the different like apps that were coming out and like pay attention to the different like productivity and business apps that could help you like get the most out of the Mac, because I was like selling it. But I still love experimenting with little apps. So that's fabulous.
I once a month do the same thing. I love it. It's like my nerdvana.
Yeah, right? Nerdvana. That's fabulous. Yeah. Well, I will definitely make sure that I Google some of these when we get off the phone, and in the notes for the show, I'll include links in there. So everyone listening, you can just check out in the show notes to see what we were talking about today. Let's see here. I mean, is there anything else, I guess, really related to offline community building? I was wondering if there was ever a point where offline community building isn't really necessary, but I don't think that's the case at all. I think if anything, you know, the benefit about building communities online is that it just gives you a broader reach, because, you know, you can't be in every single place all at the same time. We can't all go to the same events or, you know, even be on the same continents. And so online community definitely helps you to amplify that. But there's so much value into connecting with people online, I think all the time. I don't really see a reason why you wouldn't do it.
Yeah, no, I would tend to completely agree with you. I was lucky enough to work with the team from my community manager to put together Community Manager Appreciation Day last year. And we were a bit masochistic, but we ended up doing 12 straight hours of Google Hangouts.
That was with crazy. People,
yeah, from all over, and you were there, so that was fun.
I know. I totally remember that, and I remember being on that Hangout being like, oh, you poor guys, how much coffee have you had?
We
only had 3 hours left.
Yep. We were powering through. So, but it definitely, I'd say, you know, there's never any harm to meeting someone in person. It definitely really takes that relationship to the next level. But there are a lot of tips to kind of go about starting doing events in your neighborhood for your community. I think that it's really daunting to know where to start, and people think it's so much harder than it actually is. And I'm not going to say that it's not hard work. I didn't realize that when I became a community manager that I'd become an event planner.
Right.
It's kind of come with the territory. But I think that what really helps out initially is to not reinvent the wheel, to kind of work with identify partners, people who are trying to do the same thing that you are. And being in community, it's great because you don't have to compete with each other. You know, even if you're frenemies, you're still friends.
Yep.
And we kind of benefit as a space. So leverage those existing audiences. But to your point about, you know, reach and visibility, I really believe that if it's not on the internet, it didn't happen. Like, it is all about the visuals. Like, make sure that you set yourself up with a background and the staging and take a million pictures, create some sort of a hashtag. What we did was we put together Tumblrs, and then if this, then that. So anybody who used our hashtag, now we're doing Think Life over here at Thinkful, or Hootkit over at Hootsuite, and anybody who posts using that hashtag with a picture, it'll automatically get posted into the Tumblr.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It kind of breathes signs of life into your event.
Yeah.
But creating recaps and storifies of the tweets and just putting together those pictures, it takes on a life of its own. When you're starting out, you're going to have to fake it till you make it. But if you really show people how much fun these events are, even if it's two people, it'll start to ramp up, and then, you know, before you know it, you'll have a community you don't know what to do with. It'll be so amazing and awesome.
Where did you all come from?
Exactly.
Overnight success.
Yes.
No, those are fantastic ideas. Thanks so much for sharing. I was just thinking as you were talking that maybe in a few months or something, we should bring you back again and we can dive more deep into like how to get started with events if you've never done it before, because I think that that's it's a crucial skill.
Definitely. It's really interesting seeing how that applies to different audiences too, because everybody's kind of looking for something different.
Right.
It's been so much fun. Again, didn't see it coming. Could not be more thrilled that I did. It has helped my life professionally, personally. I mean, some of my best friends are people I met on the internet now.
Oh, that's so awesome. I would have to say the same I mean, the same thing. Like, as you grow, I can't remember who I was talking about this with yesterday, but like, you know, as you grow, like, different, you start to spend more time and build relationships with different people, and you have different sets of friends throughout different periods of time in your life. And I've definitely found, especially being in the community space over the last 5 or 6 years, you know, a lot of the friends that I'm more, you know, close with now are those that I have met through being a community manager. And I'm like so grateful for those friendships. Like, everyone is so wonderful and so awesome, but it wouldn't have happened unless I, you know, put myself out there and really like made the effort to meet them in person.
I couldn't agree more. You start out there and you're like, wait, what is this weird nebulous space? And you know, is there anybody else out there like me?
Yeah.
And you realize that there's this group of people who have seen the light and they want to be your friend. Like, it's amazing.
It's fantastic. Awesome. Well, Laura, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to come chat with us. I really appreciate it. Like, I loved our conversation. I have an entire page of notes sitting next to me that I'm going to transcribe and hopefully put out there for everyone. But definitely, you know, thank you so much for being on the show. And I would love to have you back at some point. Like, we should talk about that and keep this one going.
I would love to. Thank you. Count me in for all the things.
Okay. Sounds great.
But yeah, no, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for inviting me. And anything else I can do, I'm here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hopefully I will see you at Sprint in October.
I was going to say.
And then we can meet in real life. I feel like we might have met once before. I can't remember, though. Maybe we have. Or maybe it was just video chats, and so it felt like we met in real life.
It feels like we've met in real life.
Yeah. You've always been based in New York, right?
Yep, always been based in New York.
Yeah, and I've always been on the West Coast. So
I feel like I've traveled enough, but I think that if we had met, I would have remembered. Something tells me we would have had a slow-mo running hug. Something like that.
Something like that. Well, hopefully, yeah, you can come to Sprint and we'll make that slow-mo running hug happen.
Perfect. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, awesome. Thank you so much. Have a great day. And to everyone else who's listening, whatever time it is, I hope you all have a wonderful day as well. Take care.